Stand-in for Ben.
Hey. Hi.
Young Samirth.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
This is
honored.
A special opportunity. We're all very happy to have you here, Samirth.
Thank you. Thank you.
For our guest today, we have Lydia Armstrong, who has worked with us before. We're happy to have you back, Lydia.
I'm happy to be back.
All right. Awesome. And we have a newbie, Morgan Potts.
Hi.
Happy
Hello.
To have you here.
Thank you.
Awesome. And so... we've actually had you two on the air because we recorded from the episode we did raising for the fundraiser for Mali. And we have some two of our DJs are currently in Mali doing training with I believe it's a female run radio station, and they're trying to teach them new techniques. It's all about female empowerment. It's a beautiful thing. And so these two were kind enough to perform for us at this horribly noisy, disrespectful event. There was a fight that almost broke out. Like, it was rowdy. It was rough. So, spoken word and breweries do not coexist well, and we will remember this in the future.
I think we should do it again. I think we should.
Round two?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like that'd be a great time.
Yeah? All right, let's get the field recorder and just go wherever. Yeah. We can just go downstairs to the Camel.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I think it's key that it's on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think that was like the success factor.
Oh, big time.
Of course.
Yeah,
you have
we
all
want
that
like
week's
high traffic. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I want everyone letting loose.
And people just getting more and more drunk like through the night,
gosh.
I think is the best way to do it.
Easily.
For sure.
Oh my gosh. Ugh. So, that was embarrassing for us, but we will grow. 2019, that's what it's all about. So, today I have asked Lydia and Morgan to bring in some of their poetry so they can perform in a quiet, safe space where there will not be... What was that guy talking? There was a guy in there talking about... he's like, oh, is this going to be one of those male bashing pieces or something like that?
Yeah.
And I think it was when AM went up there. And so this is... If you want to bash males, like, be my guest, like,
yeah,
first and foremost.
We need a little criticism.
Yeah,
so.
I need some.
I think he said, I didn't know that this was a man-hating event.
Oh, okay.
There
really
was
yeah.
the quote that
oh,
I heard.
Oh,
yeah.
My
wonderful.
God.
Sorry.
Yeah.
2019, I guess, summed up.
Yeah, we're getting stronger.
Yeah.
Here in the U.S. So if you would like to start, either of you can start, whoever wants to go first, if you want to...
Well, I will go first. This is Lydia. This is actually my newest poem. I wrote this a few weeks ago, I guess maybe like a month ago. It's called Umbrella. I own a broken umbrella that my fifth boyfriend brought home from the lost and found. It's the only umbrella I have. It wasn't always broken, but neither was I. My first boyfriend was a drug dealer. We had two rules about everywhere we went, that the place had a phone for him and a bathroom for me. It was 1999 and Josh had a pager. I broke my bladder the night my brother did donuts in the baseball field, and I held an entire bottle of Boone's apple wine in my body while we waited for the cops to call our parents. We had two couches in our living room. A new, comfortable one, and an old, uncomfortable one. My father threw the cordless phone at the wall and left a divot above the comfortable one so my mother could see it from the corner of her eye while she pinned up her hair and watched made-for-TV movies on CBS. My second boyfriend was like that broken umbrella. When you got him open, the full span of his color stretched between you and the rain, but he didn't know how to close himself back up again. Just leaked rain all over my shoes, and took too much energy. I used to wonder how people just walking down the street could be so happy. In addition to the umbrella, I own the following things that were left behind. A metal baseball bat, a 20-year-old vacuum cleaner, a leather desk chair my cat has shredded with her claws. The cord on the vacuum has worn through to the wire, I wrap it in black electrical tape and try not to touch that part when it's plugged in. Sometimes it feels like my parts are mended with tape also. When my new boyfriend touches the places I am worn, the shock lasts for days. My mother lives in an apartment with a girl my age. They have Grateful Dead tapestries on the wall and stickers covering the refrigerator. My father lives on the river in a cinder block house his dad built. The leather desk chair is comfortable but ugly, which is what life was like with my fifth boyfriend as well. The chair he chose to take with him was hard and wooden and cold beneath the living room window, but he bought it with his own money. The internet says only a small percentage of household dust is made of human skin cells, but it doesn't say how much of what you're given is ever really yours. My third boyfriend was never my boyfriend at all, but he left behind too much to call him anything else. My fourth boyfriend thought a metal baseball bat was the best defense against intruders. My father took me to Bass Pro Shops to buy my fifth boyfriend a handgun for his birthday. I kept the gun, along with one broken umbrella, one 20-year-old vacuum, and one leather desk chair. My father gives me the specs of the firearms he cannot purchase for himself because he is a convicted felon. My mother carries a pistol at the bottom of her handbag that she has not fired in 30 years. I ask my new boyfriend to make up some rules, and he says he's uncomfortable telling me what to do. I'm still washing out my insides, waiting for the debris to be rinsed clean. The things they left behind weren't theirs to begin with, like how hurt is the worst gift to pay forward and the easiest to leave behind. You can't make me, I say to my new boyfriend, because I'm made already, of parts collected, like how dust collects dander and fibers, and a house collects things forgotten and used.
Lovely. Yeah, thank you.
So good.
Thank you.
Really good.
Yeah, I love this. I love this idea of, or this sort of autobiographical, like sort of going through the phases of your life, you know, and how these items are able to just define like each chapter and, you know, moving forward. And I don't know, something about the baseball bat kind of cracks me up, you know.
So the umbrella.
Yeah.
What was the kind of the inspiration behind that, or what was that kind of alluding to?
So everything in this poem is literal. I do actually own all of those things, and they were all items that were left behind after breakups. And I think this poem is new enough that I'm still kind of like processing all the pieces, but I just kind of started thinking about it one day, and most of these items that I still have that are kind of trinkets and souvenirs left over from relationships are all in really bad shape and damaged. And, you know, the umbrella has, I think, always been broken, and now the desk chair's all ripped up and the vacuum is old and the cord's falling apart. And I made a connection in my mind, parallel to what those relationships were like. They were all really unhealthy, toxic relationships, and so I think it felt fitting to me that these items that I still have in my house that are left over from them are damaged.
Yeah.
As well. And so I made a connection of like how that sort of relates to me in the aftermath of those relationships. And then also what's interesting about where I am right now, because I mostly write biographical stuff about either relationships, my family, or my personal like mindset, mental health, you know, whatever. And I'm currently in the first really healthy relationship I've ever been in. So I wanted to also bring a contrast at the end where I mentioned the new relationship where he's, you know, there was like a time that I was like joking and I was like, make up some rules, because I'm always like, this is the rule, you have to do this. And he's like, I don't want to tell you what to do. And he was serious about it. And I'm like, you know, this, it's just like such a different dynamic. And I think a big part of this poem for me, and I think this is the part that I'm still kind of figuring out because it is like a newer written poem, I think this is me kind of like coming to terms with, here's where I came from and I can come out of that now. Yeah. I think this is like less of a look back because I'm still trapped in this place, and more of a, I'm finally in a place where I can look back on this and be like, wow, okay, cool, bye.
Yeah.
And like move forward.
Yeah. Wow. It's really cool. It's really powerful.
Thank you.
So like in the process of gaining these items, I guess as you acquired each item sequentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see it as a new opportunity? Did you see it as almost like a new, like, I don't know about this Harry Potter reference, but like a portkey to like a new sort of destination, a new like happiness or love or whatever it was? Or did you sense unhealthiness in the relationship from the get-go?
I don't think I was like fully aware of it in the moment always. I think some of this is kind of hindsight being 2020. In each of those relationships, like, I definitely knew that they were unhealthy. Some of them were abusive. I definitely knew that, like, this is not cool. This is not right. Like, there's something wrong here. I think that when, for me personally, like, I grew up in an unhealthy family dynamic. My dad struggled with addiction when I was growing up. My parents weren't really great role models for healthy relationships. And that was sort of normalized for me. So I think for a person who has, like, who, for whatever reason, goes into adulthood and develops a pattern of unhealthy relationships, you know that you're doing it. But in the moment, there's things you can tell yourself where you're like, oh, well, maybe this will change, or maybe this is happening for this reason, or whatever. So I think at the time, like, as I was collecting the things, like, no, I wasn't really assigning any meaning to it. I mean, I think about that vacuum cleaner. I think about, like, that desk chair. Those both came from the same relationship, and that was some, like, a partner that I lived with. And I think about, like, those early days of building that home, and you're thinking like, oh, this is going to be a great new chapter, and you have that sort of initial hopefulness.
Yeah.
You know, and then later on you look back on it and you're like, wow, like, these pieces that I still have are almost like the wreckage of this, like,
yeah, they're like wounds.
Yeah, they're
like the debris. Yeah,
they're like the debris from like the war zone, basically. And like now, like, the more I'm sitting here like talking about this, I keep thinking like, I should throw this stuff away. Like, I feel like that should be like the resolution of the poem, is that maybe I should just get a new umbrella.
But it's powerful because it allows you to define your current state too. You wouldn't be who you are today, I feel like, without looking back at those pieces, you know, and being able to understand and having the perspective that you do now.
Yeah, and I think, and I talked about this, I think a little bit the last time I was here in the studio, that one thing for me that I think art, whether it's writing or music or movies or visual art or whatever, is really important for, is giving people a framework to kind of figure out the stuff in their own head. So you hear a song that puts something that you felt into words that you didn't have, or you read something, or, you know, you see a movie or whatever it is, and you're like, wow, like, I can relate to that. That kind of helps give me verbiage or context for how I feel, and it helps me to understand, like, how I feel. And I think that as a person who, like, creates art, whether you're writing a poem or whatever it is, sometimes, like, in that process, you don't even know exactly what it is that you're working out until you've written it, and then sometimes you have to go back to it multiple times before you even gain that verbiage for yourself. So it's like, even though you're the one who created it, it's like there's a process, I think, to using art as a means of defining and understanding, like, your own thoughts and feelings, that's not as cut and dry as, like, I wrote this poem, so now I understand how I felt about this. Yeah. Like, it's more of a, the more I go back to this and the more I kind of think about this, like, I'm actually learning it myself.
Yeah.
And learning to make those connections myself. And then hopefully, like, if I share it with somebody else, you're like, oh, that sounds like something that I've felt before. And then they gets their brain going and they're like, oh, like, let me kind of figure out how this makes me feel and why, and you know,
yeah,
you never stop.
It's really projective in that way.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, you can't help but, like, it evokes some sort of empathy or some sort of connection where you feel, okay, even if you're saying, let's say, this umbrella or this baseball bat, I might be thinking back as I'm listening to, oh, yeah, I think one of my exes had something like that. She had this old, like, mace bottle that she never used, and it was broken, but she always held on to it, and it was sort of like a totem or the idea of protection or something like that. I don't know. Yeah, no, that's, yeah, that's, whew. I like what you said, Samirth, about these being sort of like stepping stones, almost, like, we're able to look back at the progress we've made, like, based on this, and you actually have these artifacts, so you can actually have something that's tangible and, like, physical that you can say, okay.
Well, because I agree with to what you were saying. Like, when you're living in a moment and you're in the midst of something, you're not really looking at it, you, whether it's unhealthy or not, you're finding ways to rationalize it at the moment, because that's all you know. And then, you know, as you rationalize it, you're not really aware until afterwards. You know, that's the beauty of perspective and hindsight. And different people have different ways of finding that. So, and I guess your art form and what you do is the way of doing that. It's just amazing to see in that poem.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Okay. Morgan?
Sure.
You're up.
So I've been writing since I was like 16. Lydia and I met at Slam Richmond, which is a venue was on 0 East 4th Street. It moved across the street. But I always wrote a lot of, like, sad stuff and, like, bummer stuff because I was, like, 16. So I've been trying to write more, like, fun things to kind of juxtapose that so I don't go crazy. But this is from when we were there a couple weeks ago. And the prompt was, where do you want to be in the future? So I tried to write something fun. okay. I had a dream last week that I was a real adult. I lived in the desert with my partner, and we were so far from anywhere that we didn't have to brush our hair or wear clothes unless we were going to the grocery store. I had a job I liked where I helped people, but I still got paid well, so that's how I knew it was a dream. I got my hair cut more than once a year, and my dentist stopped sending me threatening letters about his fear for my oral health. I had a dog with a person's name, and he could talk, but he only spoke in French, which made things hard. I was happy and functional, but I wasn't annoying about it. No one knows what's coming next, when the world will explode or what dreams will come true, so I'll just keep doing my best until I end up somewhere very nearly like this. Very short.
Okay, but I like it.
I like
to be
that.
Happy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Can I just say that I think it's hilarious that that's what poets consider fun?
Yes.
Right?
No, that's my, like, happy place where I'm like, crying while I'm writing this.
I
love it. I'm just like, let's be naked in the desert and my dentist will stop threatening me,
right.
Which he has at this point. He's just, like, been sending weirder and weirder letters to my mom's house, and it's like, hey, we haven't seen you in a while. And it's like, I think your, like, mouth is falling apart or something. And, like, it is, but, like, I have other things to worry about right now. But, yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah, that's, like, as light as we get.
That was, I liked it.
Yeah, that was, yeah, that was.
Oh, it's amazing. I love it.
Wonderful to imagine.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, daydreaming.
Right?
Yeah. No, the line with the dog speaking French really
got
me.
So, I do have a dog. With a person's name. He doesn't talk, but I think that if he would, it would be French, and, like, he'd be a little rude about it. His name is Billy, and he's the light of my life. But, yeah, no, that's, he's where I draw most of my inspiration.
Nice.
Very
great.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah.
I really like the line about not having to brush your hair or wear clothes unless you go to the grocery store.
Yeah, no. And I mean, I barely do that when I go to the grocery store. Yeah. So I think it's more like when I'm a real adult, like, I'll know that I should do this when I go to the grocery store. But right now I'm, like, showing up to Aldi in, like, sweatpants and, like, just like, hey guys, I'm just here to get some milk. Like, leave me alone. But yeah, no, it's weird to, like, think about, like, what do I want to be, like, what do I want to be real? And, like, I grew up with, like, a very, like, hippy-dippy mom who always wanted us to start, like, a commune and, like, move to the desert and, like, live in tents or whatever. So it's always been kind of, like, when I grow up, like, I want a job and stuff. It's not sustainable to live in a tent. But that's always been my, like, oh, that would be really cool. And also having, like, a clawfoot bathtub are, like, the two things that my mom taught me were, like, this is very cool.
Yeah. I've been finding, like, the more I grow, the less I want to be engaged with society and, right? like, its rules. And I just would love to never have to leave my house sometimes to see other people, at least. Like, exactly. I love, like, going out and, like, exploring and experiencing. But, like, sometimes I just don't want to interact with anything. I just want my headphones on and to just perceive, you know?
Yeah, like, be an observer. Just, like, a fly on the wall.
Exactly.
Just hang out.
Yeah.
So, I guess, okay, so I've been, like, thinking about dreams a lot lately, and I was speaking to my brother earlier, and I'm pretty sure he's, like, some type of clairvoyant and can see, like, into the future or something. And do y'all think that, like, what are y'all's thoughts on dreams? Like, what do you think they are? Like, do you think that they're, like, some sort of link? Or do you think they are just meaningless chatter in your brain? Or do you think, like, we draw meaning sort of similarly to how we draw meaning from, like, if I drop my pencil a certain way, I could say, like, oh, this is, I don't know, this means I'm going to die in 12 years or something.
I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like in my, like, dreams or nightmares or whatever, it's, like, my brain trying to, like, work something out. So, like, I, you know, will have, like, a weird day or, like, not know what to do, or I'll be, like, it's always, like, I'm thinking about something before I go to bed, and then I have this, like, weird dream where, like, it doesn't really work out, but it's, like, something's there. But then I've also, like, definitely had dreams that are just, like, don't make any sense. And, like, maybe I should go see a psychic or something. But, like, I don't know. Oh. There are things I don't want to know about myself. And I'm like, I don't want to open that door.
I believe in psychics. I believe in mediums. I think that there's, I think there's, like, possibility to everything. Dreams, I don't know. Like, I agree. I think that dreams are your brain's way of working something out. It's kind of a wild concept, like, in general, because sometimes your brain, if maybe you do something a lot and then you dream about it because your brain has just been thinking about this, like, activity or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's like the most salient thing in your life.
Yeah, but then sometimes you dream about stuff that's, like, completely brand new to you that, you know, like, I don't know if this ever happened to you guys, but I've dreamed about things like artwork or whatever that then you wake up and you're like, oh, like, that would be amazing and I want to make that or whatever. It's like brand new things that, like, never, like, existed before. But I there's got to be, on an energetic level, something deeper happening there where you're able to have this other level of consciousness happening while you're asleep, and it's almost like movies are playing. It's like your brain's, like, coming up with these stories and all this stuff. It's like there's got to be some kind of level of energy happening there.
Exactly. And it's also weird to think, like, where does your ego fall into that? And, like, your personality? Because are you really yourself in the dream, or are you just experiencing it? Because I feel like I don't necessarily react or say much in my dreams personally that's, like, characteristic of, like, Dominique James or anything. It's more just, these things are happening, I'm here, I might be acting this way today or this way another time. Like, I don't know, do you guys experience that?
Yeah, I feel like an audience.
Yeah.
Like an audience to my own thoughts in a weird way in my dreams. I don't know. It's very weird. But I also, there's a part of me that doesn't want to, like you said, go there.
Yeah.
Because, like, sometimes, like, I have dreams and, because overall, it's just a very intimate experience, you know, and a personal experience. But sometimes your mind goes places you don't want to go.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And you're like, I don't know where this is coming from, why it's happening, and why I'm going to this place and I don't want to be there, you know? So it's, I don't know, it's very interesting. Because I think it's dangerous in a degree to derive too much meaning from that. Because you're taking yourself to that darker place, or you're criticizing yourself and putting yourself in a very vulnerable place. So I don't know. It's hard to say. It's a balance, I guess, like everything else, but...
Yeah, but I mean, I guess that goes into, like, where do we put psychics and mediums into this picture? Because if they're having dreams that actually do correlate with reality or do come into fruition in some way, shape, or form, then should we take our dreams more seriously just because we might not have a gift? Like, is there, like, some percentile of truth to these things? Or
have you guys ever had really strong deja vu.
Yes.
Not like in passing, but ooh, like you are just convinced that you dreamed this before.
The weirdest thing. Yeah.
So, fun fact, that happened to me. I had the craziest deja vu that I would be like, you guys, like, you're going to say this. I dreamed this last night. And then they'd be like, no, I'm not going to say that. Like, I was going to say this other thing. And I'd be like, no, I'll be like so convinced that like I could predict everyone's next move. And I thought that I knew what everybody was going to do. Because I was like, I swear I dreamed this last night.
Yeah.
And I was wrong like pretty much all the time. But it lasted for like a year.
Oh.
And then one time, there was one time I got it right. And my friend's dad gave me a ride home. And he knew, he was like one of those like cool dads that didn't care. And he was kind of like trying to give me advice on the way home. And I was like 15 or something like that. And he was like, just go inside and like go to your room and like watch TV or whatever. And I was like, all right, cool. And then we like pull up into my driveway and I looked at him and I was like, he's going to say good luck. And he looked at me and he goes, good luck. And I was like, ah. Oh.
Got it. Finally. Yes. One for 50. Okay, and with that, we're going to take our first little break here. You've been listening to Pros and Cons on 97.3 WRIR. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Pros and Cons. We're here with Smurf.
Hello.
We're also here with Lydia and Morgan.
Hello.
Hey.
All right. We were just talking a little bit about dreams, talking about premonitions, deja vu. I feel like this was about to transition into like synchronicity maybe or something weird. I feel like this is a topic of conversation that's been showing up a lot in my life, which is also another coincidence, I suppose. So... but before we hop back into that, let's get some more poetry going. Whichever one of y'all wants to go first.
I can go first this time. Okay. All right. What am I doing? Okay. Let's try this one. So this is one of the ones I did. I think this is the one that caused the guy to say, is this a man-hating party? To which good. I say,
nice,
yes.
Nice, perfect.
Yeah. Make sure that mic's up close.
So. Yeah, let's get real close. Yeah, everyone can hear,
to hear it.
How hateful I am, apparently. real rude. this is for waitresses. A waitress is a tough thing. Every waitress I've ever met keeps a fake wedding ring in one pocket and a... for the lingering man with the heavy fingers and a knife in the other for the same reason. I have never felt safer in a bar than with the girls that I work with, spiteful and unapologetic. Amanda chased a guy out of the bar for touching another girl, and all the men watched and sweat. She is a bullet and the gun and the quick trigger. Amanda has a master's in teaching but waits tables instead because teaching won't pay her student loans. She fights with all her teeth. Bree's grandmother is a real-life witch. She scared the ghost out of her house with one look. I've never met a girl more magic. She stares down the men at the bar until they burn and they still tip over 20%. And Megan is a quiet storm. She reminds me to eat and do laundry and go to sleep. When a man came in asking if I was there and left when he heard I wasn't, she sent me his license plate and security camera footage. She calls to make sure I get home safe. She doesn't get off the phone until I've locked all the doors. Every waitress I've ever met says the world is dangerous. We see it every day. We watch a man in a suit try and slip something into a girl's drink. We set him on fire. We see the darkness in the world and we turn up the heat anyway. Amanda says, hiding is giving in. She says, I've been hiding long enough and it's never kept me safe. She says, I could call the police, but instead I call my mother, because she is also a sharpened knife. We learn what we did from the women who raised us, the waitresses and bartenders who made unforgiving tyrants with manicured fingers. Every waitress I've ever met is a survivor. You can see it in our eyes, and we won't stop when we're tired. We'll stop when we're safe.
Wow, awesome. First of all, I just want to make it clear, I think that guy kind of overreacted just a bit.
Right?
But
yeah. Yeah, I would say
me,
so.
But I don't know.
I mean, he's probably a heavy-handed dude, so.
I was like, all right, well, you can go, but it's fine.
Yeah.
So weird. Such a weird night.
Yeah, that was like, a strange one.
My boyfriend was like, is this, like, normal? And I was like, I don't know, maybe. We'll see. Who knows?
I mean, so just weird. Look at, like, what's going on right now in our state, so. Maybe it is normal. So, I don't know what normal means anymore. But,
well,
the
thing is that what you're talking about in that poem is you're talking about, like, a man who comes up to the restaurant who sounds like he has some kind of weird intentions looking for you.
Right.
You're talking about, like, the male characters in this poem are threatening, intimidating people.
Yeah.
And are, like, acting inappropriately or doing things that are scary to you and your coworkers. And so for this dude across the bar at the fundraiser to be like, this is a man-hating event. It's like, are you not hearing, like, what she's talking about? Like,
I was, like, super concerned, honestly.
Yeah.
Should we call the police on you? What are you hiding?
Part of the problem, man.
I don't know. He's just being reactionary.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And drunk.
He was drunk.
He was definitely drunk.
I think he was drunk.
What I liked about the poem was, I think, the, I don't know how to phrase this the right way, but kind of this collective struggle that you kind of speak to in the fact that you don't call the police, you call your mother, you know, and this idea of a shared identity. And that because she is, you know, I think like a sharpened object as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, that's something. It makes it. I don't know. It just makes it. I don't know. It's kind of bad in a weird way. I don't know if I was supposed to say that, but yeah, I don't know. I really like that.
It's like it's definitely and like I've been a waitress since I was like 15. Like this is my main skill. This is most of my resume. And like I remember being like 15 or 16 and working at this restaurant. And this guy coming in and leaving, and he leaves, first of all, he leaves a $2 tip on like a $25 check, which is wrong. Everyone tip 20%. That's my PSA. And then he leaves me his like business card and then like a hotel key. And I was like, this is such a strange, it's like, first of all, you have a business card, so you obviously have more than $2 to spare for my tip. I think that's what I was most mad about. But then I went up to one of the other girls who was like a little bit older than me and I was like, look at all this stuff. And she was like, you need a plastic wedding ring. And I was like, first of all, I'm 16. And she was like, yeah. And like, I know so many who like have a fake wedding ring or like, you know, whatever. And it's just like the creepiest thing. It's so creepy to be like 15 and 16, have like grown-ups hit on you, but it's this weird thing where it's like
R. Kelly.
Literally, honestly, it's just the weirdest thing.
It's like the sad truth of the reality we live in. It's
right?
Unfortunate.
And instead of being like, that's so terrible, it's like, this is your next step. Like, you're a grown-up now, so you get a fake wedding ring or you do whatever. And so that's why I love all these girls that most of them I've met pretty recently, because they're just like, you know, they've also all been in the restaurant industry for a long time and they're kind of like sick of it and they're tough and like they don't care.
Well, I think what's really beautiful about the poem is the, you know, lack of a better word, sisterhood between you and the other waitresses that are mentioned and then also the female family members that are mentioned and just, you know, that kind of tribal mentality that we look out for each other and you know, we call each other when we get home and if somebody's acting weird, we're gonna like let you know and we're gonna like I think that is the most powerful part about it to me. It's like, yeah, I'm hearing the stories about these inappropriate, creepy dudes.
Exactly.
But I think that the real like backbone of that poem is the strength that you guys have together in the ways that you like support each other and look out for each other and like, you know, that bond that you guys have. I think that's really awesome.
Yeah, it's exactly. I couldn't have said it any better. And I don't know, it gives a very powerful message. It's a very uplifting poem in
again,
that sense.
Again, like what poets think is like uplifting.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It's something where like, it's the thing we always talk about, like girl power or whatever, but it's also we live in like kind of a world where we're all meant to like compete with each other in some kind of way. And you know, like the middle school girl mean thing, like trope is so like talked about, and like girls are catty or whatever. And so, you know, we're given all these like roadblocks to try and like be together. It's like on one hand, like stand up for your sisters, but on the other hand, like someone has to win.
Yeah.
And so like trying, you have to like actively try to like go against that. Cause like, I remember being in high school and there's so many girls who are like, oh, I don't get along with girls, I just have like guy friends. And I was like definitely one of those people. But now it's like, you know, why couldn't we just all be cool together and like not have to be like the one girl in the group or like be, you know, tougher, like cooler than everyone else. Like, it's just such a weird thing.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, you know, 21 and just like figuring this out of like, oh, like we should all be friends and not hate each other.
I think for women especially, it's definitely a self-realization that you have to have, because mm-hmm. it's not taught to you as frequently as it is taught to you to compete with each other or be, or to feel insecure about each other.
Right.
And I kind of went through something similar in like my early to mid 20s, where I just kind of had to like look at the people that I was hanging around. And you know, at the time, like, I was hanging around a group of girls that we would go out and they would make like snarky comments about people at the bar and people's appearances and this and that. And like, there's just a lot of negative talk like that, that I never really was into, and I didn't feel comfortable with it. But I also, it took me a while to kind of like look at that friend group and be like, wait a minute, like, why am I spending my time with these people? Because there was a level of it that was kind of like normalized to me.
Exactly.
And you either, I guess, you know, you go in different directions, and maybe sometimes you kind of figure that out and you start having like healthier feelings about yourself and about other women and about like, you know, how you guys should interact with each other, or you just continue to like
not.
Yeah.
It's interesting, because I think what you're speaking to is not only exist amongst women, it exists amongst other minority groups.
Yeah, I think like any marginalized mm-hmm. community.
Yeah, like yeah. I'm Indian, and in the Indian community, I feel like sometimes if an Indian guy sees another Indian guy, it just turns into sizing each other up immediately,
right.
You know, and like comparing each other, you know, in whatever shape or form. And it's, I think you're right, it in a weird way, it kind of speaks to a broader insecurity mm-hmm. and lack of, you know, securing their own identity. But it's interesting how that happens.
That's so wild, because I never really, I don't think that's talked about outside of women. I don't think that that's something that's talked about in other demographics. I think it's like fairly common knowledge that your average person knows that women are kind of, you know, it's like there are stereotypes, like catty women,
yeah.
you're kind of pitted against each other. And I think it's like a more common thing, but I think it's less common for people to understand that within other marginalized groups that the same thing is happening. I don't think that's something that's really talked about.
Yeah, it isn't. And it's weird how it isn't, you know. It's not a dialogue we have, because if it's a dialogue that was accepted, even in any form, if it was just even made in a, portrayed in sort of a humor sense, like as a comedy, I think people would be more willing to accept it and understand it. And then you can move beyond that, you know, but it's not, and it just becomes awkward, you know? So, but yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's definitely a trend that I went to an all-boys school, so I didn't experience it particularly firsthand, but in growing up and meeting and making more female friends, I would notice that it's almost like tokenism, you know?
It's exactly like, it's very weird, and it's almost like when you see, it's like, I don't know, especially on college ads, I think is where I see the most of like, this is a diverse campus, and it's like one white guy, one black guy, a girl.
And a guy in a wheelchair.
And they're like, we're super diverse. And I was like, why is there only one of everybody? Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
Or it'll be like two white guys, then one of everybody else.
Yeah.
And it'll be like, we're super diverse.
Do you know the term, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, I've only read it, it's like homophily? HOMOPHILY?
I don't think so.
It's like how, it's basically the concept of like birds of a feather stick together type deal. And it's like this psychological phenomenon where you can't help but attach to the other people that are most similar to you. And it seems like, at least definitely like what you're describing, it seems like, is this how it generally is, like, in your interaction with other...
No, I think, it depends. I think it's also an age thing, you know? Like, yeah. I think it's an immaturity. You know, like, I feel like as you get older, you move beyond it. Because as you get older, you realize you have a common... If the person's realized their self-identity and understands their identity and is comfortable with it, you find a way to find a common ground. You grow close to each other.
Yeah.
You make something of it. Mm-hmm. But as an adolescent, or even in college... It's seen as something else, you know? So yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is kind of tangential, but that term you're using, I don't know. It's interesting because there's so many different ways that can go and become.
Absolutely.
Because it can become very unhealthy in a weird way too.
Yeah. That's where social bubbles come from.
Yeah. And it speaks, and to me, in my opinion, this is me getting personal, but it speaks to a broader problem we have in our society today, you know? And I think the 2016 election pretty much stated that. So
it's kind of a dual problem because you're talking about a social bubble where there's not much diversity within like a group, but then also the toxicity that's happening within that group because they're all feeling super insecure and like defensive about each other, you know, and like picking each other apart and it's not really a healthy dynamic on any level.
Yeah.
It's like isolation but also like exclusion. So it's like you're in this weird like in between place of I don't feel comfortable anywhere else, but I also feel like I have to fight to be here.
It kind of reminds me of what happens if you actually put two beta fish, Siamese fighting fish, in a bowl together. So they won't actually fight each other. That's not actually what happens. I mean, they might sometimes, I guess, like certain individuals might or whatever. But overall, what happens is they try to stay really far away from each other because they don't want to hang out. They don't get along. They don't want to be like social friends. And they'll die eventually just from like stress. So they'll kind of press their bodies up against the far sides of the bowl from each other. And just like over time, they'll die from just being like stressed out and unhealthy.
Wow.
Wow, that's really interesting.
From their environment.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh my goodness.
It's like there's so many layers to that.
I think if you put two males, I think is what it is.
Yeah, it's two males.
Two males in a bowl, they'll... And I used to work at PetSmart way back in the day, and I think we like tested it out a couple of times, and that was what happened. And they just
Friday
like
night fights.
Well, I mean, when you're like 20 years old, and like everybody that you work with is in that age group, and you guys just we did a lot of weird stuff.
I can attest to this.
Yeah, we like ate crickets.
Yeah, it's boredom.
Yeah, but anyway, so yeah, we did it a couple times. We put the beta fish in like the little cup, and they did. They just kind of like smushed themselves against the opposite sides of the bowl from each other, and they're just like, why are you making me be close to this dude? And then we'd take them out, you know, they wouldn't die, but if you left them in there long enough, they probably like wouldn't eat, and they just, you know, systems start to break down and they die.
Oh my goodness,
that's interesting.
Yeah,
ultra passive.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah,
god, I always thought they were like violent creatures that just couldn't stand the sight of each other.
No, I mean, I'm sure, like I said, I'm sure there's individuals, if you put two of them together, I'm sure some fish will go after some fish at some point. But yeah, overall, more so, they like violently stay away from each other.
It's a violent separation.
It's a violent separation. Yeah.
Okay. Huh. Oh. There you go.
Cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, beta fish.
Beta fish facts.
Oh my god. So I had another question about waitressing.
Yeah.
So sometimes I notice in, you know, like certain restaurants of a certain pedigree, let's say, that all of the waitresses may look a certain way.
For sure.
And do you think, like, how much discrimination do you think there is in, like, the hiring process in terms of that?
So I now work at a really great place, that I love, and I haven't seen much of that, but I've definitely worked at places where there's a look that it's going for, because it's a thing where like if you have attractive waitresses, people are going to want to go there, or like, you know, you tend to see more waitresses than waiters, or like female bartenders are like kind of like a cute thing. So it's definitely, you know, people aren't just going, I don't know, I'm going for the food because that's what I'm interested in. But a lot of people aren't just going for, like, the food. It's, like, an experience.
Right.
Yeah.
And, like, an atmosphere and an environment. So it's a really weird, it's such a weird kind of thing because it's still like, it kind of adds to that weird like fight. And it's also like, if you are working somewhere where that is a kind of known thing, then you start to feel kind of validated in a weird way.
Yeah, I bet.
You're like, oh, this is like I'm like hot enough to get this job or whatever, which is just a weird thing to say in a restaurant where you serve food and like cheap beer to strangers. But it's such a weird world. And my dad has a theory that if everyone worked a year in restaurants and a year in retail, the world would be a better place.
Oh, I agree entirely.
But apparently we can't like mandate that. So it's more of just something he's pushing into the world. But it's also weird because there's such a like power dynamic between like in that situation where like you have a customer come in and you are like, you know, you bring them all their stuff or whatever. And even if they're rude to you, you have to be like cool with it. But I've definitely found that like you can tell who's worked in a restaurant before by how well they tip. Mm-hmm. So like you can see like they're kind of commiserating with you. Even if you mess up, they're like, everything's amazing. But if some guy walks in like a suit or like, you know, whatever, like looks important, then he's going to leave. Exactly. Yeah. And then he's going to leave me like $3. And I'm like, I know.
And his business card.
Yeah.
And his business card and a
and
hotel
key.
And his hotel key.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's like the creepiest guys are always the nicely dressed.
American psychos.
Exactly. It's a lot of that. But it's a lot of weird. Like I'm working in a restaurant and I like don't eat, like I just eat fish. I don't eat meat. And I had this guy come in and he was like being kind of annoying. But he said something and he was like, have you ever tried this? And I was like, no, like he was like, how are your burgers? And I was like, they're good. But like, I do like a veggie burger because like I don't eat meat or whatever. And he was like, so when you were looking into a career, you chose to work at somewhere that like serves meat or something. And I was like, actually, no. Also, goodbye. But it's like the weirdest like privilege thing. And you know, you can't like first of all, it's totally fine if someone works in a restaurant forever. That's fine. You make pretty good money.
Yeah, definitely.
Considering I, you know, probably will make more money as a waitress than I will as like a social worker. But whatever.
But it's not like you were going into this like, let me look at all my preferences and like,
exactly.
Let me choose a
career
based on like what kind of food I eat.
I don't know what this guy.
It was the dumbest conversation I ever had, and he was like there with like his wife or his girlfriend, and she just looked so mortified, and we just like made this eye contact, and I was like, you should dump him, like in my brain, like this telepathy thing, and I was like, this isn't working out for you. But I think that the most unattractive thing when, because like I dated guys in high school who like didn't tip well. And I think that that's one of the worst, like that's one of the things where I'm like, ooh, this isn't going to work out.
Yeah.
Like we can't do this. It's just, it's such a weird like community. And it's also like Richmond's such a small city that like everyone, no matter what like kind of restaurant company you work for, everyone kind of knows each other. Which is also weird because you'll go out and be like, oh, I follow you on Instagram or like I know you from this thing. But yeah, it's a weird vibe. It's a weird world.
Yeah, certainly.
I will say to your original question, Dominique, I was at brunch at a really, I won't say where. But
brunch like the restaurant brunch?
No, not the restaurant brunch.
Okay. Not naming
it. But I was at the meal brunch at one of the more upscale restaurants in town, and two of our servers were young African-American men, and I remember this sticking out to me, and I was like, wow, this is unusual.
Yeah, that's a rarity
in this level. I mean, it was like a really nice old school restaurant, one that's been around for a long time, like storied in Richmond kind of place. And I was like, kudos to y'all for stepping outside of what has been like a stereotypical model for servers in restaurants. But also I was like, this is really messed up that this is sticking out to me as an unusual thing. But it did. It stuck out to me. Like, this is, I don't see this very often.
Yeah. And it's almost, and then it's almost like at that point, is it because they're being progressive, or is it because they're being regressive and they want black male servitude? So it's kind of like, right? What do you want? Yeah. Where do you stand? Like, you
There's
never
no
know.
Great way to look
yeah,
at it.
You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. That sucks.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, I don't want us to run out of time. I could ask y'all millions of questions, but I would love for you to read us another poem, Lydia.
Okay, I will. This is a shorter one. Don says, "The way I see it, I'm grateful to have someone that makes me feel this way. We finger punch text messages from our respective work days. His is in Chicago in a building that used to manufacture coffins. Mine is on the East Coast surrounded by upholstered cubicle walls that look like carpet. The way I see it, I say, this is all just temporary and one day you'll live here. And Don says, I want that. I try to tell him about the vacuum in my chest, how missing him is a hole full of movement, how I can feel it churning like a whirlpool, and all I can think of are twisters and black holes, and how my heart feels like it's spinning. He says he's grateful for the emptiness, exalted to have someone to make him feel this kind of sadness. We are so lucky, we say, to be able to feel so much nothing and everything at the same time. I tell him about the magnetic poles of my heart, how falling in love with him is like drifting in space without a spacesuit, my insides filling with wonder at the vastness of the universe around me, even as my body drains itself of oxygen and chokes. One day, all our pieces will come together, I say, and we gaze upon our future like a meteor threatening the Earth's sky, too far off to make out the impact, but coming."
Ooh,
wow,
love that.
Yeah.
I love that imagery. Oh my gosh.
The nothing and everything at the same time, and then the line about being in the space without the suit, you know, and suffocating yet feeling this exhilaration was like, I don't know, gave me goosebumps a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. You're supposed to have some sort of like enlightening experience when you're near death almost.
Or when you're in love.
Or when you're in love. I mean, what's...
Sad
I don't
poet
know. I feel,
party. Jeez.
Yeah. Hey, I brought my tissues.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons why I actually chose this poem was in keeping with our theme that even our happy stuff is sad.
Yeah, no, for sure. I felt that.
Yeah.
I super felt that.
Yeah, so this is... This one is newer in terms of, like, compared to, like, some of my other stuff. I mean, I wrote it in the last 6 months to a year, I guess. But this is a poem about my current relationship, which we touched on earlier and is awesome and very healthy and happy and, like, wonderful. He does live in Chicago currently, and we are working on, you know, getting him here eventually. But even in this, like, super amazing, happy, wonderful thing, there's still so much sadness because of the distance. So when I wrote this earlier last year, I think I was like struck by that. I was like, wow, like this is the happiest I've ever been, and this is like the best thing that's ever happened, but I also feel like, you know, all my insides are gone. Like I also feel like all this sadness, and we miss each other so much, and it's like this like powerful, also like negative feeling. And this was my way of kind of figuring out like how to express what it feels like to feel like so filled up with something but also so empty, like
yeah,
at the same
yeah
time.
You, like you have a void missing
yeah
right there, but you feel complete at the same
yeah
time.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a incomplete puzzle, but you know exactly where the piece is. You can see the piece every now and then, but you know you'll have to disconnect at some point.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's I understand your experience far too well.
Yeah.
Like way too well. I'll tell you after we're done recording. But unfortunately, you're gonna hate this. We're out of time.
Oh.
Yeah.
So fast.
Sorry guys. We could talk more after this. But hey, thanks for tuning in, listeners. This has been Pros and Cons. We've had Lydia Armstrong, Morgan Potts, and our sub in for the day. I think you did pretty well, my guy.
I'm honored. This was awesome.
Yeah.
If I ever get the opportunity again, I will jump on it. Thank
okay
you so much.
Of course.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much. Acceptable.
It is acceptable.